Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Steve continues his vacation, so we continue our best of week. Sean Carey, we're here in the Sunbury Motors Studio, Sunbury Motors Ford Lincoln Hyundai in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia on the strip, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Subscribe to our Steve Jones Show podcast. After we air the shows on WKOK, they can drop right to your smartphone and tablet. You can do that from either the Apple Podcast app, iTunes, and Google Play. Just search Steve Jones Show. You can always find 3 months of shows archived on our podcast page at stevejonesshow.com. We'll wrap up our best of week tomorrow. Phil Savage, the former executive director of the Senior Bowl in Mobile, Alabama, is now part of the American Alliance of Football, the AAF, and he is part of the Arizona franchise. He's the general manager, and Rick Neuheisel is going to be the head coach of the Arizona team. So we'll talk to Phil, replay that interview. Also, Mark Wogenrich, longtime Penn State football writer from the Allentown Morning Call, get his recap on Blue White from the spring, and also share with you his terrific story that he wrote a few months back about former Penn State star from the 70s and current football analyst from BTN, Matt Millen, who is right now battling the fight of his life health-wise. David Taylor, one of the top wrestlers on the planet, was a winner at Final X last month at Rec Hall. We'll get his conversation. David, along with Ironhead Jeff Byers, the voice of Penn State Wrestling on the Penn State Sports Network, and Tony Knopp, the CEO of Spotlight Ticket Management, will join us tomorrow to wrap up our best of week. So this hour, we're going to focus in on college basketball. A couple of analysts from BTN will join us, and it was back on June the 1st. It was the annual Coaches versus Cancer golf outing at the Penn State courses, the white and the blue course, and it's always great to tap into the basketball knowledge of not only on-court analyst, but in-studio analyst, too. Sean Morris of BTN.
We are now here at a table of nothing but undefeated people. Sean Morris.
Amen.
Have you ever lost a game since you've gone
Never.
Into this gig?
Never.
Have I?
It's the greatest scam ever.
I mean, and scam is the right four-letter word. We have scammed this system for a long time. How are you?
Doing great. Great to be out here. Great event. I'm here with you, Steve. How bad can it be? Right?
I'll get back to you on that. Last night, Cappy is supposed to pick you up.
Oh, I'd still be standing out there. I was like Harry the homeless guy waiting for him to come get me. But I'm here.
Unbelievable.
Yeah.
I'll take good care of you.
I appreciate that.
Right. No, Cappy's supposed to pick him up. I didn't. He's supposed to pick him up. In fact, he's still standing here now.
Yeah.
That's the only reason we have him on, because Cappy still hasn't picked him up from last night. All right. So we hit this offseason, and there are a lot of players, Sean, that made up their mind on what to do with the NBA draft. And I think it ended up being six Big Ten players opted to go early, including Penn State's Tony Carr, which meant a lot of them. Tyler Cook, Palmer, Copeland, Bruno Fernando,
yeah.
Carson Edwards all decided to come back. What does that do for the depth of this league for this upcoming season when that kind of talent is returning?
Yeah, I think it's great for the league. I think it's great for the young guys that went through that process, because I think it's really important that if they're even considering making that next move, that they get some valuable and insightful, and more importantly, someone that has an idea about what they're talking about kind of advice. Bruno Fernando is a great example.
Yeah.
I think years past, because of his athletic ability and his size, he might have just gone and stayed in the draft before they had the opportunity to go in and test it. Now he has a chance to go in and test, and guys will say, look, your athleticism and your strength isn't going anywhere, but you need to work on A, B, and C.
Right.
And for a young guy like that, I think it could be the difference between shuttling back and forth, if you're lucky, between the G League and the NBA, or maybe having to go completely overseas and now coming back for another year, developing your skills, and then moving on to the next level. So I think it's great not just for the schools, but it's going to be great for the league. Nebraska is a great example, Steve. Yeah. I mean, to have Copeland and Palmer go through that, I think that's a team with what they have returning. That's a team that doesn't necessarily roll off the tongue of a lot of casual Big Ten fans, but that's a team that next year, preseason, they're going to be in the top four in the league, I think.
Right, and not only that, I think schedule-wise, the Big Ten has helped them out a bit because they get Seton Hall in the Gavitt games.
Yep.
They get Clemson in the ACC Challenge, which was announced today. Those are the kind of RPI games that Tim needs for his team, I think, non-conference.
Yeah, because it really hurt him last
year.
Yeah,
it did.
And you know, just to show you how close things can be, if the kid from Kansas doesn't hit that three, they might have gone to the even losing in that first round game against Michigan. But that's just how you have to win those types of games because, you know, when it comes to the NCAA tournament committee, everyone is looking at all these numbers, and you can slice and dice them any way you want, but it becomes a safe harbor for those people because they don't have to necessarily do the – they talk about the eyeball test. I'm guaranteeing you some of those people don't know whether the thing's pumped or stuffed.
I know.
How much do they watch?
I know.
So you have to win those games, and when you have Clemson and Seton Hall coming up, it's a good opportunity for them to really solidify their resume.
And Penn State's going to go that same direction as well. They're going to have Virginia Tech here, and there are a couple of games they haven't announced yet that are, I think are going to be – I think they've talked to you about which games they are that are going to help as well. When you look at how an NCAA tournament committee has to think, because you have to do studio shows and have to also make a comment once in a while. It's quick in a game,
right,
as opposed to a studio more expanded. How much time do you need to take so that you're trying to somehow consider what they're considering between quadrant 1, 4, and things like that?
You know, you try to familiarize yourself with the quadrant 1 through 4. But, you know, I'm a simple guy, as you know, Steve.
Right. Well, I'm the same way.
But here, and so it comes down to this, really. Who'd you play? Where'd you play him?
Right.
How'd you do?
Right.
And so you can sit there and have guys coming in with an abacus and how'd you do? Where'd you play these people? And they try to overcomplicate it.
I think they overthink.
They overthink it, especially when it comes to seeding.
Yes.
And I'll give a great example.
Oh, yeah.
A couple of years ago, you know, Villanova has won 2 of the last 3. Well, in the sandwich year, which would have been not this past tournament, but the year before, they were ranked the #1 overall seed.
Right.
So the NCAA tournament committee, as they're doing their seeding, they figure it out. So they're going to end up playing Wisconsin, which they had as the 4th #8 seed.
Right.
Now, anyone that watched any basketball throughout the course of the year is sitting there going, what are you doing?
Yeah, that makes sense.
What could you possibly be thinking?
Right.
So you want to make sure that, you know, if you can, you try to take as many of those decisions out of their hands and get the best seed possible. Because for people who say that seeding doesn't really matter, it certainly does.
Oh, sure it does. Because it changes the entire way you work your way through the draw.
No question.
The ACC coaches, and it's not surprising that the coaches would feel this way, would like to see 4 more teams in there go to 72 with a second Dayton, probably out west to regionalize, instead of having UCLA travel east and so forth. What was your thought when you heard about 72?
I'm not a real fan of it.
Neither am I.
I'm not a real fan. I think that when they went from 64 to 68, I could kind of buy that.
Yeah.
But it was a hedging buy.
Yeah.
You know, you have people who want to go to 96. Well, you know what? Let's just give everyone a trophy and just start all over.
Yeah.
Okay? So, to me, if the NCAA isn't careful, okay, you have to be really careful about what makes this tournament special. And what makes it special is the opportunity for a Loyola, for a George Mason, for a VCU to get in. You can't
or a UMBC.
Exactly. You cannot have David and Goliath with no Davids.
Right.
And so those 4 additional games are going to be other at-large.
Power 5 teams.
Right. So, but everyone's so worried about how March is magnified. Well, you know, we've got to get in. Well, okay. Well, okay, make it 96. I'm not a big fan of diluting it.
This is what I'm a big fan of, is what you're doing working. If it's working, don't touch it. Guess what? That's a decision. You can make a decision to not expand it because it's working. That's actually a decision.
Yes. Correct.
And I don't understand why, well, we feel like we have to do something. By keeping it the same, you have done something.
Well, and the reason for that is that you have a lot of people that mistake activity for achievement.
Yeah.
So we're going to meet, we're going to do all these things, we're going to talk about all these things, when sometimes the best option, just like the best job you might have, is the one you're in.
Right.
That doesn't mean you don't continue to evaluate, but, you know, to go in and just add for the sake of adding, right, you have an unbelievable, there's nothing that captures anything. Now, there'd be bigger one-day events.
Yeah.
But for something that captures things for 3 weeks, right, very few, if anything, in this country, in the sporting world, capture that. And if you dilute that, then what you have, in many ways, becomes then the end of the NHL playoffs, where, okay, we're just going to go through the regular season to get to the playoffs, and just about everybody gets in, right, and then people don't care about necessarily that the best teams are necessarily, right. I've heard that argument, well, you know, it's not the best way because the best team doesn't always win. Who cares? Right. That's life.
Right.
Yeah, right?
Right. Well, you're a Northwestern graduate. How did it feel, the fact that they cracked that barrier, because there were only 68 teams in that 96?
Yes. Well, it was a long time coming. Much like me finding a woman that could put up for me, the law of averages were against them. But eventually, it has to happen. Right, Steve?
I'm in the same boat.
Yeah, so it was phenomenal for them. And it was great for the school, and it was great for college basketball. But you also have those stories coming out of, you know, the quote-unquote non-power leagues every year.
All the time.
And if you limit the access to those teams, I think you're doing a great disservice to the game.
Well, see, I think what's going to happen, let's play devil's advocate here for a moment. You're going to have people in a devil's advocate moment say, well, you could get a second Missouri Valley team in. And you and I both know that's not how it works.
It's not how it works,
okay,
Steve.
And if you have a choice between, pick one, St. Louis out of the Atlantic 10, and Tennessee, what are you going to pick?
They're going to take
ratings.
They're going to take Tennessee 7 days a week and twice on Sunday.
Yeah.
And to your point about the point about the Missouri Valley, look, if Loyola went to the Final Four, and you and I both know, if they don't win that conference tournament in St. Louis, they are not getting in.
They're not in.
Regardless about whether they went down and won at Florida.
Right.
So this whole thing about we're going to increase access to the folks that are outside the power, they're deluding themselves. They really are.
Well, you and I both know that's a, quote, selling point to expand.
Well, yeah.
And you and I both know it's not realistic.
No. I've got a bridge in Brooklyn, right?
How much?
It's very reasonable, Steve. For you, it'll work out financing.
Like how you think.
Yeah, get back to me on that.
My friend.
Great to see you. Thanks a lot.
Great to see you.
And thanks,
Sean,
for coming out and covering. This is a wonderful event. Fantastic people.
You come in every year, and I think you'll probably speak tonight.
Oh, yeah, that'll pass.
And, well, they've got some idiot to MC it. So, I mean, you've got all the ingredients for something big.
If you don't rat me out, I won't rat you out. Great to see you. Thanks a lot.
See you, brother. Sean Morris, BTN.
Four Coaches versus Cancer. They're going to go over the $3 million barrier in fundraising with this tournament. And it's sold out. Some of the money goes to cancer research, but also some of the money goes to... There's the Bob Perks Fund. There's the Bestwick Foundation. Both are absolute nonprofits where every dime that they get then is distributed to help out other people. I'll give you an example. Say, God forbid, something happens to someone we know in the audience. Now, the caregiver is sitting there saying, oh, my goodness, now what do I do? You know, because there's more than just going over to Geisinger. You know, all the treatment, all the doctor's meetings. There's so much of that that goes on. Well, guess what? The bills don't stop coming. The funds I talked about that are also part of the proceeds of this tournament, people don't want to ask for help, but they've helped pay an electric bill here and there. If, for example, you get a loved one home and they need a lift chair, I know they've gone out and they've bought a lift chair for somebody, because they needed that and couldn't afford it themselves. Now, that's the kind of charity you want to be associated with. That's why I love the Purdue Memorial Golf Tournament so much, because it goes directly to the Greater Susquehanna Valley YMCA. It goes directly to helping great people in our area, and that's what Coaches versus Cancer does. Same thing. It goes direct, because, look, when you make a donation to something, I mean, you don't want it. Do you want your money going to the corporate entity of it, and you know, so they can pay some salaries and their bills and things like that? No, you want it to go so it's directly helping people. That's what happens with this tournament. And Sean's here. He's been terrific. Dick Girardi was here today. We're going to talk to him in the next half hour. And that's what makes this tournament, Purdy Memorial Tournament, so special. Those are the two that I now play in for specific reasons. Great people. And today was special. We had a great time with the Dietz and Watson group. Just like I had a great time with Craig and the Chief and Sean. Matt Cotrillo came out, too.
He did.
I feel like I'm missing something. Did I miss someone?
One
more. Yeah, was there one more?
Yep. No?
One word or two words? Oh, that's right. The suit was there.
Yes.
Yes. Distracted on the phone, making deals. And I said, "You're making a deal?" And he said, "Yeah." And then 15 minutes later, a pizza arrived. All right, so we'll come back with more in a moment. I mean, is that your idea of making a deal on the phone?
I like pizza.
But that's... You still had the line of the year on that.
I thought about that this morning on the way to work.
Did you really?
I've been to jail. The what?
You what?
Human resources. Hello?
Yeah, hello, human resources. I've been to jail. No, wait. Hold on a second. All right, we'll come back with more in a moment. So, for those who don't know, when Sean's incredible wife, Deb, and she's incredible, she had to have surgery. So, you know, naturally, you know, how many times do I ask you how she's doing, you know? Right.
Lost count.
Yeah. Okay. Because we care so much about them.
Very kind of you.
Okay. Oh, God, she's family. So, the suit finds out. And his quote to her was, "Well, I've had surgery." So we said, start going through this series of things with him as a joke. I've watched the Rose Bowl. I've watched games on TV at Madison Square Garden. Sean blurted out, "I've been to jail." What? It's always about me. It's not about the person that needs the care. All right. So when he said that, I had one of those moments. I almost fell on the floor. Right? Now, part of it was the delivery was perfect. The subject matter was a riot. And the fact that Sean did it made it exponentially better. I could have said it. It would not have been as funny. The fact that Sean said it made it so much funnier.
Well, I didn't think of it. That's the thing. I didn't think of it and practice it ahead of time. That's what made it.
Oh, no, no, yeah. It was so, it was natural. Now the odd thing is that the suit didn't like it. His wife laughed. Suit Light didn't get it. And that became a problem, but he was studying for a Spanish final. All right, so we'll come back.
When it comes to car buying, there's the other guy's way, and then there's the SMC way. The other guys force you into a vehicle you really don't want. The Sunbury Motors way lets you take the time you need to browse, ask questions, and take the test drive and think on it. For over 100 years, the Mertz family and all their employees have made your experience the most pleasant one you'll ever have. The other guys won't offer you the best price for your trade, no matter how much they say they will. The SMC way is their promise to provide you with the most money the market shows your vehicle is worth. The SMC way is to offer you all applicable factory rebates on new vehicles and generous discounts. Looking for a pre-owned vehicle? The SMC way checks each vehicle in a 200-mile radius to determine the lowest price, then beat it. It's the lowest price promise, just part of the SMC way. The choice is up to you. The other guy's way or the SMC way? The SMC way wins every time. Sunbury Motors Company in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and at sunburymotors.com. Selling more cars and satisfying more customers for over 100 years.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors Ford Lincoln Hyundai. North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, Sunbury Motors Kia on the strip, routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf. And Sean Carey here. We're guiding you through best of week. Steve enjoying vacay. He returns on Monday. Phillies return tomorrow night here on WKOK after the All-Star break. Crank up a three-game weekend set with the Padres. 6:30 will be the on-deck time tomorrow night and Saturday night. First pitches at 7:05. And then the Sunday matinee on deck at 1, first pitch at 1:35. And then the Phillies will be heading into a three-game set next week, Monday night, Tuesday night, and Wednesday afternoon against Manny Machado, Chase Utley, and the Los Angeles Dodgers. Hey, don't forget you can subscribe to our Steve Jones Show podcast on either iTunes, Apple Podcast app, Google Play, search Steve Jones Show, and 3 months of shows we always have archived at stevejonesshow.com. We're on Facebook, give us a like. We're on Twitter, give us a follow. Twitter handle at Steve Jones PSU. Today is July the 19th, this day in sports history. At the age of 54, Muhammad Ali, he floated above the Summer Games. That's right, the world was floored when Muhammad Ali was on that huge platform at the far end of Olympic Stadium in Atlanta. It was the perfect choice to light the cauldron that night. His body was slowed by Parkinson's syndrome, but held the flaming torch and was able to transfer the fire into a contraption that would raise the fire up to the cauldron. 1996. Also this day, more Olympic stuff, 1976, Nadia Comăneci. The 4'11", 80-pound, 14-year-old from Romania, she became the first in Olympic history to score a perfect 10. The scoreboard was unprepared for four digits. It read 1.00. She earned the mark with an exquisite uneven parallel bars routine in the Montreal Games, and she received not one more, not two more, but six other 10s and three gold medals in the Montreal Olympics. And in 1910, at the age of 43, Cy Young of the Cleveland Naps, later be renamed, of course, the Indians, won his 500th game, defeating the Washington Senators 5-4 in D.C. Young retired in 1911 with 500 victories. Only Walter Johnson of the Senators, with 417, has won 400 or more games. And that's a look at this day in sports history. And we got some more outstanding college basketball conversation with Steve and, well, we got Steve and Steve Jones and Stephen Bardo of BTN.
Hey, Steve, thanks a lot for having me.
Let's talk about the players that made their decision yesterday or in the past couple of days as to what to do. Kevin Huerter's the one that's going to leave Maryland, but Bruno Fernando is staying. Give me your thought on Huerter leaving and the impact on Maryland, but Fernando staying.
Well, I always thought Kevin Huerter was an NBA caliber player.
Yep.
For him at the right time. He did a really good job at Portsmouth, or excuse me, the NBA Combine in Chicago. And, you know, he's an attractive prospect with his height at 6'7", his ability to stretch the defense with his three-point shooting. He's got point guard skills. He played point guard in high school, and you could tell he's very comfortable handling and setting up for teammates. And I think defensively, he's a little bit underrated. So it seemed like it was a perfect storm for him. Everything came together. Bruno Fernando, before the combine, many thought that he was going to be able to get drafted possibly late in the first round, early second round. But obviously, he got some more information that suggested it was better for him to get a little bit more season at Maryland. And I think for Big Ten fans and for Maryland fans in particular, that's a good move because I think I want to see more Bruno Fernando in the college ranks before he leaves.
In fact, I'm with you. I think he'll improve his stock by staying an extra year, solidify himself maybe as a late first-round pick by staying an extra year. At Purdue, they already lost the four seniors. Nojel Eastern went through the process, so he's going back. We knew that was going to happen. But Carson Edwards is going to come back. What does that do for Matt Painter, especially considering the losses?
Well, you just hit it on the head. You know, you don't want to you typically don't want to have three to four guys that you've counted on for years leave your program because that's a huge leadership void. But with Carson coming back, I mean, he was as hot as any player outside of maybe Tony Card and Big Ten Conference coming down the stretch. So I think that he'll only get better. It will stabilize Purdue somewhat. They may not drop quite as far with Ian Eastern coming back into the fold. And, you know, Matt Painter does an excellent job. And if they can get some quality play from Matt Harms up front, they may not drop off considerably like many thought they would after the exodus of the senior class.
I mean, there are other guys like Ethan Happ at Wisconsin, Isaiah Moss, Tyler Cook at Iowa, Nick Ward at Michigan State. I think all of us expected them to come back. The one guy I wasn't sure about was Charles Matthews at Michigan. He decided to come back. What were your thoughts on that?
You know, I think Charles is he makes you lick your lips a little bit with his athleticism and the way he played in the NCAA tournament. But the one thing that really Charles suffers, or not suffers from, but he hasn't developed quite as well, is his ability to put it on the deck.
Yeah.
He can straight line drive you to death going right. But if you make him go, if you take that first straight line drive away, he really struggles getting to where he wants to on the floor. And he's got a good size of 6'5", 6'6", but you've got to be able to handle the basketball a little bit better at that next level. You know, he can space it, he can rebound it, he can defend, he's a really good athlete, but he's got to tighten up that ball handling in order for him to have an consistent career at the NBA level.
Now, Tony Carr was not in that position to say yes or no yesterday because he made the commitment coming out to get an agent right away, so he was in. He went through the combine. He's worked out for at least six teams so far. What are your thoughts on Tony Carr's next-level potential?
Well, I've always thought Tony Carr was a pro. I mean, he's got a unique pace about his game that belied his age. I mean, it seemed like he had been in situations before. So I think he's got the size. I think he's got the acumen. He scores the basketball. I think his shot, which some may have criticized in college, I think he'll have the ability to get that off fairly quickly because it is such an unorthodox release. It's, you know, it's almost like a set shot. He's at 6'5", 6'6", already. I think if he goes to the right franchise that can give him a little bit of time to a NBA level, I think he could have a 10-12-year career in the league.
What about transfers? There's so many transfers. It's, what, 700 to 800. And this is a pattern, Stephen, that you and I have seen now in recent years in college basketball. How have you always viewed the number of transfers in this game?
You know, Steve, I've always thought it was too many just because I'm a purist and you and I come from an era where guys tend to stick things out a little bit more than they do now.
Yeah.
I don't put that blame all on the players. I think that we as adults have a lot to do with that as well. And I think it's unfortunate because it just changes the game of college basketball so quickly, and it's tough to get a relationship with players now at the college level because if they're there 1 to 2 years, you know, if you don't really follow them and really dig into them deeply, they can be gone before you really get to know who they are. And so I think that's a downside of the business, but I also think that they're trying to give the players somewhat of access and a little bit of freedom of movement to different programs just because of the nature of, you know, the players not having a lot of flexibility in terms of movement or in terms of, you know, who their coach is going to be. And so coaches have the ability to move freely, and I think this is a way to try to even the playing field somewhat for the players.
How did you feel about what the Rice Commission did and the recommendations they made? Because you and I both know the NCAA will probably go the direction they said. What did you think when you saw what the Rice Commission put out?
You know, I was skeptical, Steve, because the thing of it is that NCAA is a mess. And I think that we all understand that it's a mess. I think it's structured a way that's antiquated to deal with today's issues that the sport presents. I think the Knight Commission was something that they threw together quickly to try to save face.
Yeah.
I think the recommendations were kind of obvious. I don't think that there'll be much that comes of it. I just think, again, the NCAA and the whole structure is antiquated and needs to be blown up and done again to reflect today's state of the college basketball game. And I think that there needs to be a lot more trust that needs to be exhibited on all sides for the game to get back to the way that it can be. And so I think the Knight Commission and all that, I think that was window dressing. And I'd like to see some serious initiatives put in place by the NCAA themselves, because they know what they need to do in order to right the ship.
Stephen, what are a couple of things that run through your mind to say, okay, it would make the overall structure better if they at least put on the table a consideration of this?
Well, they have to get serious about it if they are going to be the governing body over particularly college basketball. They need one, a college basketball commissioner. There needs to be a head that speaks directly for college basketball, someone that's had experience, preferably as a player, possibly on the coaching staff, at administration, at a university level, and hopefully some outside business experience, because this is a huge business that the players need to take bigger part in my opinion. Second, I think that it would behoove the NCAA to hire people who have investigative backgrounds, who can do economic background checks, that can do personal background checks, because the NCAA itself, enforcement is not nearly strategic enough, nor can they move quickly enough to affect lasting change that will have, you know, that will make programs think twice about cheating and trying to do things underhanded. I think those two things would really go a long way in making the NCAA a viable enforcement entity.
You know the life of a student athlete because you went through it and you lived it at a very high level. You're an outstanding college player. You see today's modern players, Stephen, and how the modern structure is. Are they doing enough for the modern player under the current conditions, or is there something they need to consider where they give them more?
You know, I'm a player's advocate, Steve, and I've always believed that the players are getting the short end of the stick. I mean, if you want to teach economics, why not allow those players to part in the revenue that they generate? I mean, that's basic economics in my mind. Everywhere else in the United States society, capitalism is embraced except for when football or basketball players are asked to step to the table and take part in what they create. It's really a sham, in my opinion. I benefit from it, from the system that really takes advantage of the players. I used to use the word student athlete. I don't use that term anymore because I know that NCAA has created that to protect themselves from litigious situations. Mm-hmm. And so I just think that if you're not going to allow the players to take part in the revenue on a percentage basis, then you need to allow the players to benefit from their likeness and name, and also that they can develop a social media platform and a following, and they can monetize that. They need to be allowed to do that as well if they're not going to benefit from a percentage basis in the revenue that they help to generate.
We'll shift gears to one final question. Now that we've seen who's coming and who's going, any initial thoughts on what the makeup of the conference can be? And, well, in fact, let's go to the 20-game. I'll just scrap that and go to the 20-game thing. What do you think about the fact that Big Ten's going to 20 games? Is that good for the conference? Does it help with the NCAA, or does it depend on the combination of teams you get?
No, I think it helps the Big Ten Conference, and I think it will really benefit programs like Penn State and Nebraska, because, you know, they were just on the outside looking in this year, and both of them were NCAA quality caliber teams. And so I think when you take away two possible games against maybe quote unquote mid to low major programs that may not have a positive effect on your resume, I think it's only going to help the league. It's going to help the league from a television standpoint. It's going to help the league from a perception standpoint around the country. And so I think it was inevitable, and I hope that it does exactly what it's designed to do, and that's to benefit some of those programs in the Big Ten that, you know, have been knocking on the door that want to be consistent NCAA tournament appearances, but they haven't been able to do so, and hopefully two more conference games can help some of those programs do just that.
Stephen, absolute pleasure. You know how much I always enjoy the conversation, whether it's in person or on the phone. Thanks so much, and all the best to you.
Thanks a lot, Steve, for having me. I really appreciate it.
Steve and Bardo, courtside analyst, studio analyst for Hoops on BTN. We'll check out some headlines, get a little recap of round one of, well, we can call it the British Open. so we're not confusing you with it being the U.S. Open. That was last month in golf. How'd Tiger do today? And a couple of NFL notes to close up shop today on our Thursday edition of the Best of the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Best of the Steve Jones Show here on WKOK. Sean Carey, Steve's back on Monday. Phil Savage, former executive director of the Senior Bowl. Mark Wogenrich, Penn State beat writer for the Allentown Morning Call. Penn State wrestling extraordinaire now, well, no longer at Penn State, but now in the amateur ranks and one of the best on the planet and winner of his final X bout last month at Rec Hall, David Taylor. Be on the show tomorrow and his interview with the voice of Penn State wrestling, Ironhead Jeff Byers, and also the CEO of Spotlight Ticket Management, Tony Knopp, all with us tomorrow as we wrap up our best of week. Well, the opening round of the British Open wrapped up. Kevin Kisner at 5 under par. He went out in 34 thanks to an eagle on the 6th, but he impressed even more on the back 9. 3 straight birdies on 13, 14, and 15 to come in with a 32. So he is sitting at 66, 5 under par. Puts him alone in the lead. And you have 3 players tied for 2nd. Erik van Rooyen, Tony Finau, and Xander Lombard. Finau looking for his 3rd straight top 10 finish at a major this year after finishing 5th at the U.S. Open. Now, sliding down in a tie for 8th place, Rory McIlroy, Justin Thomas, Zach Johnson, and Danny Willett. John Rahm, 2, and 5 other golfers. They are all at 2 under par. McIlroy and Rahm mostly settled for pars on the day. Tied for 18th, Ricky Fowler, Matt Kuchar, Henrik Stenson, and 13 others at 1 under par. And tied for 32nd, you've got Jason Day, Adam Scott, and Tiger Woods. They're all at even par. Woods started hot with 2 birdies on the front 9, but came within a total of 2 inches from landing 2 more. Came apart a bit going 2 over on the back 9 to erase the early success. Jordan Spieth is tied for 50th. He is 1 over par. He started hot with 3 birdies and no bogeys over the first 11 holes, but Spieth gave up 3 under that score with a double on 15 and bogeys on the 16th and 18th coming in. Phil Mickelson is at 2 over par. Dustin Johnson, brutal showing for the world's number one ranked golfer. He is at 5 over par, tied for 129th. NFL note, Julio Jones, wide receiver, Atlanta Falcons. He's unlikely to get what he desires, according to Jeff Schultz of The Atlantic. The Falcons have informed Jones that they have no plans to give him the raise that he is seeking before the 2018 season. Wide receiver is in the middle of a 5-year, $71 million extension that he signed back in 2015. He is essentially unhappy because he got leapfrogged by players like Sammy Watkins and Jarvis Landry on the highest paid wideout list. Johnson went and Jones worked out and went with Terrell Owens recently, which reportedly got the Falcons front office all hot and bothered because who knows what things that T.O. was whispering in Julio Jones' ear. And, of course, the big baseball story that came down last night, the Dodgers winning the Manny Machado sweepstakes, acquiring the prized all-star shortstop from the Orioles, who's a one-player, five-player trade. Machado, 26, expected to be introduced by the Dodgers in Milwaukee Friday night before they open a series against the Brewers. Dodgers in a close race in the NL West after a very slow start and a lot of injuries. They're leading Arizona by a half game going into the second half of the season. By the way, there is one Major League Baseball game tonight. It is Cubs-Cards, and then a full slate tomorrow night, including Phillies-Padres from Citizens Bank Park. We'll have it for you tomorrow night on WKOK on deck time 6:30. We'll have another Best of the Steve Jones Show tomorrow. I'm Sean Carey. Have a great night. CBS News top of the hour. And then Mark Lawrence steps in for the late day news roundup at 5:06 on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
You're listening to News Radio 1070 WKOK Sunbury. You can hear us anywhere in the world with the Sunbury Broadcasting Corporation app.